the last month or so, I have had some not so great training days. Like when I was super stressed about, you know, the skin cancer or not knowing if it was melanoma or not, like trying to wait, like there were days where like I would try training and I would just like break down because, and you know, I was hitting the weights or, you know, close to what I was supposed to be hitting, but they just felt horrible. And just mentally, like I couldn't like give the amount of effort that I needed to. So like there were a couple, I still remember one day we were deadlifting and I missed a lift that like I shouldn't have missed, like, you know, shouldn't have missed, but the stress. And then I just went and I just sat down and I just cried for like a couple minutes. And, you know, years ago, this would have destroyed me. And I would have, you know, forever thought that I was so weak and, you know, never going to be able to lift this because that's where I used to go, you know, spiral down the little spiral. So I just kind of had to, you know, give myself a little pep talk of, you know, it's just stress. Stress affects your training. Stress is stress, no matter what kind of stress it is. And I got back up and continued on with my training day. And that's just sometimes what you have to do.
Welcome to the future is female powerlifting. A show where women of all strengths can explore the world of female powerlifting. I'm your host, Heidi Donnell, a 60-kilo powerlifting gym owner, and each episode we bring you an inspiring interview or message to help you unlock your true inner strength and potential. Thanks for tuning in.
Aloha, my beautiful, beautiful friends, and welcome back. We are on episode 93, and today I got to have my friend Liz on the show. Liz Ribeiro, who, you know, I met at the Showdown last year. It was kind of crazy. We started talking about it a little bit. It's been a whole year since the Showdown, which is, you know, one of the biggest meets that we have throughout the years. And you know, Liz is kind of a badass. And so it was really cool to be able to actually bring her on here because I felt like, along with all of you, I learned so much about our, you know, the people that I get to interview. And selfishly, it's really cool for me because I love interviewing them. I love learning more about what makes them tick, you know, what kind of struggles they went through. And Liz goes through a lot of things that, you know, she really hasn't talked about publicly as well. And so many gems in here that I think all of you can pull away from just from that intro itself, you know, that she struggled like many of us have struggled with confidence in our lifting and kind of moving forward and still persisting even though things get really hard. Listen, and Liz has a 385 squat, 203 bench, and a 457 deadlift. That is 1,047 total and a 504 dots. Like, what? That is crazy. So stick around. She talks a little bit about what her training is like, things that she's changed over the years, and the things that she does different now to help her progress. You know, this episode is brought to you by my gym, Core Strength and Performance, where we live through strength. And hey, if you need a little more guidance with your powerlifting, your nutrition, hit me up, core256.com. That's C-O-R-256.com. I would love to hear and work with each of you who, you know, you might need a little bit more help. And I understand that. And I would love to be able to help coach you. And I want to thank all of you who take the time out to rate this podcast on Spotify and Apple. And especially, I want to give a big shout out today. And this is like a very in-depth review that I got, and I freaking love it. Like, these are the kind of reviews when I listen to it, I'm like, this is why I still do this, dude. But I did want to read this review by Angel Ack, and this was on Apple Podcasts. She said, Heidi provides information, entertainment, and inspiration, which thank you very much. I have an interest in strength training since I was in college 25 years ago. I also have diplegic spastic cerebral palsy, which I'm assuming is a type of cerebral palsy. Periodically throughout my life, I've joined gyms and taken classes and purchased my own dumbbells, and with the help of apps, developed quite the physique at age 40 plus. I had a relationship with an amateur bodybuilder, and he motivated me. That didn't last, excuse me, and the pandemic and the stresses of a single mom of a teen, I gained 25 pounds and started a new job in a warehouse. Anyway, that led me to some hip issues and falls and a mallet finger from taking off socks wrong. This is so crazy, but I feel like I need to say all of this because it gives more insight into the actual person. So I hired a personal trainer. I've been at the same gym for 130 sessions now, and my current trainer is a former powerlifter. I love strength sports, and my trainer's modification based on my medical team's advice increased not only my strength, but improved my balance, stability, and endurance. Yes, this is what I'm talking about, okay? That was me. Your podcast gives me topics to discuss with my trainer and keeps me motivated that someday I might achieve my dream and pursue competitive StrengthSports, and Angel, yes, you can. There is never a time where you're going to be strong enough. And, you know, I'm not implying that you think that, but there is no reason why you can't step on the platform right now. Really, all you need to learn is how to be able to squat, bench, and deadlift. And I even tell people, like, maybe you can't fully squat right now, but you might start off with a deadlift only and a bench only. There's no reason why you can't get your feet wet and sort of start into that position, because there's nothing wrong with that. I think that it's a great way for to keep a goal in mind, right? We are all doing this because we're adults and we don't have any other thing that like keeps us motivated. Like, this keeps us motivated and moving forward. And there's no reason why you can't do that. I have a member at my gym. Her name's Mary. She's one of the most amazing people ever. She has MS and she struggles in different areas to have control on her body. And powerlifting has been such a great motivator for her. And there are parts where we have to adjust and modify, and maybe one day she might not be able to do a full power. Who knows? But it ain't going to be anytime soon. And she's definitely at a point where the stepping on the platform is a motivation for her, and the day-to-day increases in strength and technique. You know, they might not be as huge as she was when she was 20, but damn, they are sure amazing now. And she's in her late 50s. So thank you, Angel, for sending this. And I hope that this review inspires all of you, because it damn well fucking inspired me. I'll tell you right now. I love hearing that. And life is not an easy road for anybody. And the fact that we all come together through powerlifting is a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I thank you all from the bottom of my heart. Now, let's get into this with Liz. And I know, so we met, kind of met. Well, I would say I first saw you at the Showdown.
Yes.
Was that last year?
Yeah, it was a year ago. Or wow. It was like the end of September. So yeah, it's been a year.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so I saw you then. You were kicking ass and taking names.
Thank you.
I loved seeing, you're a natty lifter. So yeah. I'm going to say, yeah, you know, like, nothing against anybody, because I have tons of friends who run gear.
Yeah.
But I always am happy when I can see natty lifters at big events that are non-tested like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's, I think for you too, I'm sure that's probably something that is like awesome for you, right?
Yeah. I thought it was super cool just to even one, get invited to it. And then two, be able to go there and like hold my own. Cause like the whole time, like I had, you know, some of that whole like imposter syndrome of like, oh, I'm not strong enough. Like, why am I going here? I don't belong here. But actually there were some other people there, Chad and Bria, and then, Joe Sullivan, were actually all super nice. And they just kept telling me like, no, you were invited, you belong here.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. And, so then I kind of, you know, calmed down a little bit, but it was definitely, you know, it's exciting to be a natural lifter, being able to do meets like that. And, you know, no, was I going to win the money? Absolutely not. But that wasn't why I was going.
Right. Right. It's even just to show up and do your best. And you did really well.
And have that kind of experience too, because as I said, after doing the Showdown, like, I don't know that there's any meet that's going to like terrify me as much as that did.
Right. Right. You got to do those really hard things once in a while.
Yeah. And so, you know, I've always had some anxiety of like going into doing meets. Like my first probably like 2 years of competing every day before a meet, I'd be like, I'm going to throw up.
I still do
I
that.
I never did.
But I always got to pee my pants. So,
yeah, that too. That happens like 500 times, but I'm still dead set on the fact that I'm going to throw up.
Yeah.
I don't though. So the Showdown was because we went in and the guys were lifting the day before. So we had weigh-ins and then went and watched the guys lift. And I just remember walking into the venue and just be like, oh my God, I have to lift in here tomorrow. And
it's
just
big.
Like, and Nate kind of looked at me and he's like, are you okay? I was like, I don't know. I was like, I think I'm going to throw up. And it was like the day before, and then like the whole like 24 hours, I was just like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. But it turned out great. It was super fun. Everyone was really nice and encouraging. And I went there, I did it. I placed fourth in my weight class for the day out of seven. So I, you know, held my own, which I was pretty proud of.
Yeah, that is so fucking awesome. So how did it feel to like walk up there to open up with your squat? Like, how was that for you?
So the first squat, I'll never forget this. I've never lifted off a monolift before.
Oh,
ever.
Gosh.
Well, I did one time, like a month or so before, just to like feel it to see if I even wanted to use the monolift.
Right.
And then that was quickly decided, no, I did not want to use the monolift. So I still walked it out, but I'd never used one. I didn't really know. And I guess when I got my rack height the day before, I got the wrong rack height. So it was like one too high. So I'm already like super nervous. It's my opener, which is always, you know, the most nerve wracking. I'm like walking out there, like trying to calm myself down. And I go to unrack it and I can't get it off the hooks all the way.
Oh,
so like one side gets stuck. And so I'm like trying to like shimmy it out as I go back with it. And then I'm standing back there. So I finally, you know, I get out, my legs are visibly shaking. Like Nate even told me, he was just like, I was watching you and I was like, oh shit. Like she's going to like lose her shit right now. And I somehow managed to squat it and it was fine. And so, and then I went over to the table afterwards. I was like, yeah, that needs to be lower. Like I can't. But then it was lower and then it was fine. Whoever was back spotting too, like when I was walking back in, he was just like, you're in, you're good. I was like, okay, thanks.
Yeah. It's always good, right? When you got an experienced spotter.
He was very nice.
Yeah.
He was very nice, whoever he was. And then even on like, I think it was my third attempt, like I stood up with it and he was like, hold it. Like he like whispered it in my ear. I was like, I got it. Thanks. It was very nice. I was like, thank you, sir.
That's kind of funny. Wow. Yeah. So that's awesome. So I know when I was looking up, you know, all your information, whenever I interview with somebody, I always like to dive deep into that. And you're previously a teacher, but now you're full time, right? At your gym, Fortis Fitness Studio, correct?
Correct.
Correct. Go ahead. Tell me a little bit about the gym.
Yeah. So I was a teacher for 10 years. And when we moved down to Florida a little over six years ago, we moved down here.
From where?
And from Chicagoland area.
Okay, cool.
So I grew up in central Illinois. I moved up to the suburbs after I graduated college and I taught up there for 5 years and then moved down here. My mom actually lived down here. So we came to visit her and then decided we liked the beaches. So we wanted to live.
Right? It's like beach. Exactly.
Beaches,
cold.
Snow in Chicago. I would definitely take the beaches. So Nate was already a trainer. He'd been a trainer for a while at that point. And so we moved down here. He was looking for a gym to, you know, train at. And he found this very small, local, you know, just like family gym. It maybe had like 20 members. Like it was very, very small. But they, you know, they offered him a job as a trainer. And he worked really, really hard to like build up clientele. I mean, he was basically starting from scratch. Like we knew no one down here other than my mom.
Yeah.
So he worked super hard with them building up, you know, clients and helping them grow the business. And he, you know, made a huge impact on the gym that they had. And then they decided they were moving back to Philadelphia is where they were from. And they were moving. And so they asked us, they're like, do y'all want to buy it? And it was one of those things where like, we weren't really like planning on doing that like right then, but it was kind of the opportunity there and you couldn't really say no to it. And so part of the kind of deal when we did that was I told him, I was like, hey, this is your thing. Like, you know, I'll be there. I'll support you. I'll help out when I can, but I'm teaching full time still. So like you're kind of in charge basically.
Yeah.
Like I'll own it with you. I'll be a co-owner, like whatever. I'll be there nights and weekends, but like, I'm not in charge of like running any part of the gym. So that went that way for a while. And then it was about a little over a year ago, I decided I was done teaching and then was going to come help him run the gym. Our gym is a little bit different than most gyms. Like we don't have just an open gym, come in and do what you want. We're technically a training studio. So we offer, everything is coach or trainer led. So we have like small group classes that are all trainer led. We have a powerlifting barbell side of the gym where now that's not necessarily like we don't walk you through your workout, but we write all the workouts for you. So everything is programmed for you. We'll coach you through it. There's always a coach there to help or ask for help, to give you spots, to give you form advice, critiques, things like that. And then we obviously do personal training as well as online coaching too.
Yeah. So you're, and so Liz and Nate, I got into a long conversation with Nate, Liz's husband, at dinner in Florida for North America's, I believe, right? Was that why I wasn't? Okay.
Yeah, I think it was.
And I just happened to sit next to Nate. And then we realized that our businesses, our gyms are so similar.
Yes.
I mean,
he came home and told me that. I was like, that's so cool.
When he was telling me, I was like, we almost bought a gym, but we ended up buying another, making our own gym. But what started us down that path was somebody was selling a gym and we almost bought it. And then we thought, why don't we just do our own? And then that's why we moved here, because my in-laws are here. But really just very much the same, which I think to me has been not only successful for us as a business, but I think like you get more out of it as a client. Like as a member, it's like you're there or another coach is there. So it's not like you're just doing a program totally on your own. You're really like your business is a training studio. People are going to help you with your goals, which I think has a huger, more, a huge impact, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's why people can be, you know, more successful in a gym like that, because they have someone holding them accountable. They have someone there checking on them. You know, if we don't see someone for a few days, you know, we're a close knit community. So like we'll reach out, or one of our other coaches will reach out and just be like, hey, haven't seen you. Where have you been? Like, we miss you. And you know, sometimes that's what people need. They're like, oh, I was just being lazy. Sorry. I'll be back tomorrow. And then other, sometimes, you know, there's actually things going on, but sometimes just having that, you know, person that you know is there checking on you and that cares about you definitely makes a big difference.
Oh yeah. Like if I, my husband's very good about this. He calls it the guilt trip, but he will guilt trip you. And he'll say, hey, you remember that one time when you told me you wanted to squat 300? Well, you need to show up at the gym a little more often.
I mean, it's true though.
Yeah, like, I'm more on the softer.
People say they want to do things, they got to work for
it. Yes. And he's so funny, because he doesn't ever do that with me, which is so funny, but he'll do it to our members, and they know that's how he is and they value that. Whereas like, I'm like, hey, how's everything going? We missed you. Where he's like, where the hell you been? It's like,
why aren't you in the gym?
Why aren't you here? So it's funny, because we get polar opposites. It's so funny. Our approaches are different, but the outcome, we're still looking for the same kind of outcome. Like, where are you? Yeah. I want you to come in. We know you know, the more you're not here, the less of your goal you're going to reach, kind of thing.
Absolutely.
So funny. So I remember getting into that with Nate, which I thought was really cool. So our businesses to me are very similar. Now both of us work in the business, right? Me and my husband both work in the business, just like you two. Do you miss teaching?
Not really.
Yeah.
I think the last couple of years of teaching were really, really tough. It was during COVID. It was when we were teaching from home. It was coming back from that. And then just the expectations that kept getting put upon us, I just think was just too much. I don't know how people honestly are still teaching. Like, that sounds horrible, but I love teaching. I loved helping kids. But I just, the stress and the anxiety that came along with it was just, it was not good for me as a person. Nate, you know, called me out on it several times, but he wanted me to quit like a long time ago. I was like, no, I'm teaching. This is what I'm doing.
Right.
But in the long run, he was right. And he's like, yeah, you're definitely like a different person now. Yeah. And I've had other people at the gym tell me like, you seem so much happier. You seem so much more like less stressed. And I'm still teaching in a way too. It's just a different form of teaching. I'm still impacting lives just in a different way. I actually recently started training a couple kids, which has been fun.
That's cool.
One's a third grader and I think the other one is fifth grade. Just doing some stuff with them. So, you know, I still get some kid interaction.
Kid interaction. I feel like the structure, like my father was a special ed teacher for 30 years. My mother was a teacher and then she became a principal. So she was a principal for most. So I was always like, educators were, you know, my mom's like, you'll be a teacher one day. And I was like, no, like I am not, like, I love my kids. I actually really like kids. So I thought like maybe that would be the route that I would go.
Yeah.
But it's sad because I feel like the system itself sets teachers up in such a shitty way. And it's so demanding and it pushes good teachers out.
It does. And I think I've had a lot of people tell me that too. Like, you know, because I was a really good teacher. Like, I didn't really, so I never used to have the confidence to say that about myself, but that's been a whole journey as well.
Yeah,
but,
good. I'm sure you were.
Yeah. But, and like, you know, every year my evaluations, I was always highly effective. I had great teaching score or like test scores, which I know doesn't really like mean anything, but it, you know, that's what they look at.
Yeah.
I had, you know, great relationships with my kids. They were, you know, pretty well behaved for me. So like I had a good, like I was good at teaching, but it was just not sustainable for like long-term for like more my mental health than anything else.
Yeah, totally. Totally. My, you know, my dad, he ended up retiring a little earlier. Well, my mom took a sabbatical and then retired.
Okay.
But she was going to continue, and that's a whole another thing. But my dad ended up, in my eyes, probably retired earlier. He did retire early, but I thought he was going to go on longer because of such a impact that he had. He was like teacher of the year in California when we lived in California. Like he's a very patient man. And I always say this, you have to be married to a Puerto Rican woman. You got to be very patient. But in the line of special education too, like I feel like you need to have that. And he retired early and a lot of it was like, it was just the BS that towards the end, he really couldn't take it. And it was just so much stress for him. And he only had, you know, four to even 3 to 5 students because he was, you know, he had students that were much more, they needed more attention. So he only had, but still, you know, the IEPs and all these things that came with it.
And it's just paperwork. And then you're spending so much of your time doing stuff that's not actually like
teaching.
You're spending time. I mean, you have to wear like 50 different hats as a teacher. And, you know, especially, you know, after COVID and even a little bit before too, but just like, you know, I taught at some pretty low income schools. And so, you know, they need a whole lot more than just an education.
Yeah.
They need, you know, for some of them, they need a parent. They need someone to feed them. They need someone who will listen to their problems. They need someone who will love them. And, you know, that's a lot. That's a lot.
That's crazy. And, you know, it is funny now, though, that you are teaching. I always say that now, like, it's funny that you say that because I said I ended up teaching, but I ended up teaching adults how to strength train, you know? And so it's like, I'm still practicing. Yeah. I'm still practicing the way to communicate in a way that they understand. And, you know, how can we reinforce these things that it's funny to me that it became like that. But which is really cool.
Yeah. I've had a lot of clients tell me, they're like, I think you explain things so well because you were a teacher first. I'm like, that's very possible.
It's probably possible. Cause you think about like trainers, they don't like most of the people who become trainers, right? They like to train and they, okay, I like to train. This is a good opportunity for me to make money in a career, but not ever that you're a good communicator or a good teacher, right? Those are all afterthoughts that you have to learn how to be. If you want to be a good trainer, but it's like you went the other way.
I learned how to teach first. Cause I mean, I was teaching well before I was working out. So then I found like a new passion with working out and training and powerlifting. And then I guess I kind of like merged those two things together, which is cool.
So tell me a little bit about what your training is like right now. How many times do you train? How do you like to train? How does that look when you lead up into a meet compared to off season?
So I train 5 days a week, pretty much regularly year round, whether it's off season or meet prep. Nate and I are actually competing in about 4 weeks now. So we're competing on October 8th together. So that'll be fun.
Where's that?
In New Orleans.
Oh, nice.
The New Orleans Sports Expo. They have the, it's like the drug tested battle born champions or championship thing there. So
I know what you're talking about.
I'm going to go do that one. So we might go down to like 4 days a week just because I sort of accidentally just did another meet. So my body's recovered from that. And he cannot handle as much like volume and workload as I can, which is typical. So we might go down to like 4 days a week. But so right now we're in the, I'm on deload week this week. And then I've got the final 4 weeks of training leading up to the meet. And then, so yeah, that's fun. When I'm not in meet prep though, we definitely do lots of volume work, which is not always my favorite. But
God. Well, give me an example of like a squat day. What would a volume squat day look like for you?
So as I've gotten stronger, it's changed a little bit. Like I definitely used to be able to handle much higher percentages for more reps. That makes sense. But like as I've gotten stronger, my body just can't recover from it anymore, which makes sense. I've gotten stronger and I've gotten older, so makes it a little bit harder to recover.
Totally, right.
But usually like a typical like volume day, we would start, you know, whatever warm up you need to do and then start with squats. So back squats. Sometimes I'll do high bar in the like volume phases just because I train low bar, but again, my body can't really handle that. And my quads are definitely my weak point. So we'll throw in some high bar squats, usually, you know, sets of 10, sets of 8, 3 to 4 sets usually of 8 to 10 reps, which is a lot. And then, and then we're big on accessories too. So we throw in a lot of accessories, usually like 3 to 4, maybe 5, depending on the day. And then all of those are anywhere from like 10 to 20 reps, like always. So, belt squats, goblet squats, front squats, lunges, Bulgarian split squats, you know, all of the really fun things.
You're speaking my but you know, what's funny is the girls that just competed with you. So I just saw Liz last weekend. We were in Florida where I had to drive 7.5 hours. She only had to drive an hour and a half or something, right? Yeah. It was super easy.
It was like an hour and a half.
Stuck in traffic, motherfuckers. But the girls that were competing then, you know, we're getting into a volume. So we're moving into more of a hypertrophy block and they haven't done it in so long. So they are high bar squatting for sets. They're working up to an 8 and they're doing a couple back off sets, right? So they're right now they're just doing 2, maybe 3, but it's going to build up. And they were,
so you got to ease back into it after a meet.
Exactly. And I told them, I go, hey, we can take a traditional deload week, which I normally have them do all 3 lifts. And then we take it at very low percentages, kind of just to move back in. Yeah. But they're going to compete in November. 2 of them are going to compete in November and the other 2 are just going to be in their off season. I said, so, I mean, it's up to you. You can take the week off if you guys like, you know, it's kind of, you know, they're like, no, we'll get right back into it. I'm like, okay, we're going to move into a little bit of a hypertrophy slightly, you know, and they're like, no, it's fine. I'm like, okay. First day, they were like,
what did you do to me? Yes.
And then, so then this is what makes me laugh is they created a meme. So Mare, one of my athletes, created a meme and it says, you know, with the clown and the clown's slowly putting on the makeup. Yeah. And it says, Heidi asked, what do you want to do for your, you know, this? And I say, let's take it. And then slowly is putting on the makeup and like, can't take the first day of pendulum squats. And, you know, like it was just hella funny, but they made a whole meme about it that cracked me up. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's really important that people also hear, you know, like how having volume in your off season or hypertrophy is important for building up, and working a high bar over a low bar is really important too, not only for your body, because I'm sure your body can't take low bar, shoulder, back.
My elbows can't take it.
Yeah. Do you know, I did an episode a couple episodes ago, but I've been hanging as like a recovery.
Yeah, I was listening to that. I heard you saying that.
Dude, my elbows do not hurt anymore. And they've been hurting for 2 years.
Interesting.
I've been going to a physio guy. He's been doing, you know, a bunch of ART stuff. And that was helping. Mm-hmm. So he was, there's a ligament right across here that I had never even thought about. But he says that a lot of people who train, this ligament gets really tight. So what happens is all the flexors on the forearm tend to get kind of stuck, and that can cause some pain in the elbow. So anyways, he would work that and I'd cry every time. But the hanging, I have like no pain in my elbow, open grip. I know. I was shocked because I only started doing it for a couple weeks consistently. And it wasn't my full weight. It was, I really kind of a pussy about it, but I was like half of my weight. You know what I mean? It's not even my full weight, but it's enough where I'm like, okay, I feel like it's working.
I'm doing something.
Yes. I'm like, the guy who does it uses like, he uses hooks. You know what I mean? Like, so the guy who wrote the book's like, don't worry too much about your hand grip. And like, that's not the point of it. We do want to have some muscles being used here. So you want to, because that can pull onto this area, but it's not a huge concern if you're thinking about your shoulder and your elbow and stuff.
Well, that's interesting.
I know. Very, very interesting. But
and make my elbows stop hurting when I'm trying to bench after I squat.
Yeah. And that's the other thing, right? So I had to stop. I can now. So I've been squatting and benching back to back, but I haven't done it in so long because it was so painful. Like I just could not do the two together. So this cycle I've been doing it and I'm like, I told my coach, I was like, oh my gosh, Julia, like, it doesn't hurt right now. And I'm like tripping. She's like, that's good. Let's keep it going.
That's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Let's keep that going. And I'm like, all right, that's wonderful.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. I was surprised. Cause sometimes when I read some stuff, it's like too simple, you know, where you're like, this
come on, you know, like that's not going to apply to me. Like,
are you sure?
That might apply to the 70-year-old man. Like, you know, I don't know, but not to me because I have so much shit I got to unwind out of my body. Yeah, it's so true. It is. Okay, so I was looking at your numbers, which is fucking crazy to me right now. You squat 385. Your best, 385.5, 203.9, and 457.4. You have a 500 dots, 504 dots.
Yes.
How was that when you got that?
That was, so that meet was like the perfect meet, basically. Like all the stars aligned, everything went great. That was actually back in March of this year. And it was at Maverick up in Alabama. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I don't even know. Like, fun fact, I've never gone 3 for 3 on bench ever. So on that meet, I was like, I really want to go 3 for 3 on bench. But I took my second attempt with that 203 and it was like the grind of my life. And I hit the J hooks on the way up, like everything. And it was just probably one of the slowest benches ever. And I was like, you know what? We're not even going to take a third. So I don't have to miss a bench.
Hey, that's okay. That's 100% right there.
But I've gone 2 for 2.
I always talk about the third is the elusive. The bench third is always the elusive.
And even this past weekend, because I changed my bench grip a few weeks ago, like 3 weeks ago. So we're like rebuilding it, but I used to bench really wide and that just wasn't working. Like I would be so, it was so inconsistent. My back just wouldn't, I don't know. It was an issue. So Nate had me change my grip probably like 3 weeks ago. So we're like, we're in the rebuilding phase of my bench.
Yeah.
But it was going really good last Saturday. And I was like, oh, awesome. Like I definitely have this third bench. And then I literally missed it by probably like 1 or 2 inches at lockout.
Oh.
I just like couldn't finish it. And I was like, that's never happened before. So
it's interesting because if you are a little bit more in, right? So that's really a tricep at that point, right? It's if it's right at the top and you're a little bit more narrow.
Issue.
Yeah. So now that's a new training, which you're going to have to focus a little differently now, right? For that. That's so crazy.
The wide grip just was no longer working. Like literally I would hit it one day and then the next day I would just get like, or not the next day, but like the next training cycle or training day, I would literally get like stapled with weight that I had like easily moved the week before. And it was just, and he's like, you know, I wasn't able to keep my back tight on some days and it was just a mess. So we just moved my grip in a little bit and it's definitely more consistent. Like I can consistently kind of hit, you know, progress and everything. So it's going to be building up those triceps for that little baby lockout.
That baby lockout. Did you hate that? It's like, that's all it is. It's like the lockout on a deadlift. It's like just that, that last portion.
That last little bit.
Last little bit. It was funny. I was looking at your videos, you know, with your deadlift. So I caught a video of Liz. She was right next to my lifter, Quayla. And so I was kind of always next to you. And then your second attempt, 423, like did not move, right? Like it came up a little and it did not move.
Didn't move at all.
And your husband was surprised. Like you were kind of surprised.
I told him I like stepped back after the bar, like didn't move. I was like, well, cause my warmups had felt great all day. My opener was like super easy. I think I opened at like 396, super easy. So I've been training on the Kabuki bar. I was back on a Texas bar, which just made my whole life so much better. Yeah. And I was like, this is going to be a great day. Like maybe we'll actually, you know, get a PR deadlift for once in my life. Cause it's been a while since I've PR'd my deadlift. And, then the second attempt didn't even move. I stepped back. I legit looked at the bar. I was like, did they load this wrong? I was like, it shouldn't have been that heavy.
But it's so funny because then your third, it totally flew up. Like it was, you know, it looked like what a second attempt would be, but it flew up. And it was funny because you laughed and then you walked off and here's Nate, like a visual for you guys. Cause I took a video of her walking over to her husband and her husband's holding their dog. And it was like, it was such a cute moment. Like you guys were laughing. Like what the hell? What was that?
It was the weirdest thing. Like I've never, like it didn't budge. And then it was just the way that it was supposed to be. And the only thing, and he came over and told me, he's like, you didn't really try. I was like, well, I thought I tried, but like, and I talked about this recently, but, on that second attempt, like, I don't know where my brain was, but like, it was clearly, I wasn't focused and like looking back and like reflecting on it. Like I literally, and I don't ever hear or like notice anything. I'm really good at like tuning out everything when I'm getting ready to lift. But for whatever reason, And I still, like, the music stopped to, like, change songs when I was, like, setting up, which that's not a big deal. And then the song that came on was, like, one of my favorite songs that I listen to all the time when I lift. And I was like, oh, this is great. And so I don't know if that was enough that, like,
distracted you
during my setup or something. And then I was, like, thinking about the music, which is, like, the worst rookie mistake that you could ever make because I don't do that. But apparently that day I did. So that's, like, the only thing I can think of is, like, I literally just let my brain get distracted. And so I didn't really, like, focus on my setup as much. I don't know. But
yeah, because it does look like you gave up early. Like, you didn't pull as long as you normally do.
Because I've been doing this long enough, like, I can usually tell when the bar is going to break the floor if I keep going and when it's not going to. Right. Because I've had moments where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is coming. I just have to be patient. And then there's other days where I'm like, this is not going to happen. And I kind of felt myself come forward a little bit and it go into my back more than it usually does. So at that point, I knew it just was not going to move off the floor.
Yeah.
I was like, well, that's weird.
All right. So do you have any advice for a new lifter? Most of the people who listen to our podcast are beginner to intermediate lifters. Most of them love hearing your stories and other stories. You know, they like to hear other people's paths because they're on their own sometimes. Is there any advice that you would give to a new lifter if you had to pick one thing?
Ooh. I think probably if I had to pick one thing, that's really hard because I could give all the advice to everybody. Right. But it would probably be like, don't give up on yourself. There's, you know, when I first started, there were all of these people that, you know, I would look up to, you know, local or not local, whatever. And I'd be like, wow, they're so strong. Like, how do they do that? Like, I can never do that. And then through the years of like working, I've just kind of kept putting in the work year after year. And I've now passed where they were or where they are now. Like, some of them are still competing and I have then surpassed them. So I think it's easy to fall into the trap of like comparing yourself and not feeling good enough and feeling like, oh, I could never do that. Or, oh, if only I could squat this much or bench this much or deadlift this much. And, you know, the numbers that I'm hitting now are literally numbers I never imagined that I could hit when I first started.
Yeah. I mean, your first squat was 269 or 259, right? Like, you were in the 200s.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, yeah, my first, and I think it was like 269 or 259 because it was like double body weight for that meet. And like, that's what I was super excited about. Like, I wanted that double body weight squat, which is still a strong squat, like for sure. But, you know, and then I just, you know, I really wanted 300 and that took a while too. Like, it wasn't like, oh, I squatted, you know, 260. Let me just go hit 300 at my next meet. Like, it took a little while. Yeah. And I went through some phases of cutting, and which I shouldn't have done. So I could give all kinds of advice on that one too. But I would be, my second part of advice would be don't cut.
I agree.
To a weight class that you shouldn't be in.
Yeah.
I was cutting to 123 for a while.
Oh my gosh. Are you serious?
Yeah. Yep. That would be my other
part. At 140?
I'll do that.
And you're usually 140, right? Or were you 140 then?
So I weighed at that time, I weighed about like, when I first started powerlifting, I weighed probably about 140, but I was definitely not like super jacked. Like, I definitely had some weight that I could lose at that point. So when I started powerlifting, I cleaned up my diet a little bit and I did get down to about 130.
7 pounds still.
Yeah. So I competed at like 132. And then for whatever reason, my brain told me that I needed to be smaller. And I was like, oh, there's a 123 weight class. That's not too bad.
Yeah.
So let's just like, you know, go compete there for a while. So I ended up losing probably another like 3-4 pounds. And so I would walk around at like 127 ish, 128, which still is well within the 132 weight class. I would then do a cut leading up to meets to live at or to weigh in at 123. And I did that for about a year. I think I did 3 meets at 123.
Wow.
And I was miserable. I didn't get any stronger the entire year because my body had nothing to grow. I was barely eating. And I still remember the last meet I did at 123 was one of the ones in Crestview, Florida. And I still remember I was setting up for one of my squats and Amanda Micah was the head judge. And I'd been having people tell me like over and over that like, I need to stop cutting. I need to just grow. But she was sitting as the head judge and she was training someone. And she probably doesn't even know that she said this or did this, but she's like, she's just so tiny. And I was like, wait, I don't want to be right. so tiny. Not what I want.
It's like, so, uh-oh. Yeah, I better put some weight on.
And I like hear that as I'm setting up for my squats. I mean, my squats went fine. Like it wasn't a big deal. But and then that meet, I'd actually had tweaked my back a few weeks prior to that meet. And then, which, because I was cutting, so I didn't have enough to like recover basically. And then I retweaked it on bench of all things that day. So like on meet day. Ugh. And then I went to deadlift and I missed my first two deadlifts. Like the first one I started pulling and because of, I guess, however I tweaked my back, it like something happened. And I like blacked out for a second. Mm. And then like I didn't actually like fully pass out or anything, but like definitely I was like not all there for a second. And then I tried again on the second, and this was a weight that like, I mean, it was my opener. It was a weight that I had done so many times in the gym, and second attempt, it kind of like similar to last weekend. It didn't move.
Wow.
And so Nate took me to the back. He like rewarmed me up. Basically, I think I was opening with like 319. And so he like had me warm back up. Like I did 225, 275. And then I came out and for my third attempt and I got it. And it looked as easy as an opener should have looked.
Yeah.
But that was the end of my cutting to 123. And then I kind of embraced eating and gaining weight. And that's honestly when I really saw a significant increase in strength was when I allowed myself to get bigger and get stronger, because you need the food and you need the weight to be able to like help you grow. And, I think that was it was a very hard lesson to learn. It took me a long time to be okay with that. But so then I competed at 132 for I think one or two meets. And then I actually competed I told myself, I was like, I'm not going to cut. And I think I weighed in one day at like, or one meet at like 135, which was fine. I was okay with that. Yeah. And it was that meet that I actually won best lifter for the first time.
Oh, that's awesome.
When I didn't cut at all. And so that kind of to me like solidified, hey, you're done cutting, let yourself grow. And then I've just continued to do that. And now I usually weigh in around like 145 ish.
Yeah. For the 148.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've had the same where I was trying to like, even my first meet, I think I was bodybuilding at the time. So I was already kind of like in the lighter side. And when I look at pictures of myself, I was like, oh my gosh, I look like a child. Like in comparison, I'm like, oh,
like I was so small. What happened?
Yes. It was like 20 pounds, like over 20 pounds away. I was like, holy shit. But I think the last time I missed weight, I had my period and I could not let go. It was half a pound. Yep. And I came back at night and that's it. I can't do this, you know, because I'm always sitting at like, this was the 132s and I'm always sitting at like at the time, I think it was like 139 ish. So it wasn't awful. But at that, it was like, my body did not want to just, you know, and then I was like, what am I doing? You know, and my lifts suffer. Yes. I know like you're more competitive than I am. So I could definitely debate that more if you know what I mean, where I'm like, okay, I'm going to the showdown, going to the American Pro. Maybe I can buckle down and, you know, maybe this is a gamble I'll take, you know, but at my point I was like, you know, I'm going to have fun really, you know, and challenge myself.
And that's the big thing that like, you know, I've kind of shifted to also is like, I'm just going to have fun. Like if I win, that's great, you know, but also at the bigger, more competitive meets, like I'm not going to win those meets, which is fine. Like I know that. And I know what it would take to probably have a shot at winning them. And it's just not something that I personally want to do.
Exactly.
Nothing against people that do, but it's just for me personally, I don't want to take that step to actually, you know, place and win at those meets.
Yeah. I feel the same way. Like there's nothing against it, but like I've talked about this on the show before, but I've always got this fear of getting cancer. I don't know. It's like this, my father had cancer, family. So it's like in my mind.
Yeah.
Like that's like a huge, like you'll fuck it up and you'll be the one who gets, you know what I mean?
So fun fact about cancer and me, just so I have skin cancer that I found out a month ago.
Oh my gosh.
So that's what's on my nose. It's basal cell skin cancer. No I've been way. Doing chemo cream treatment for the past month for that. And then they had a spot on my foot that they thought was melanoma that they took off to biopsy. And they said, it's not melanoma, but it's a moderate abnormality something. So they still have to do some kind of surgery to take off more tissue around it.
Oh my gosh.
That's what I've been dealing with for the past month or so.
Oh my gosh. So that's
definitely that stress is not fun for life.
Yeah.
And lifting. No. It makes it really hard.
Oh my gosh. And you moved to Florida where it's sunny.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah. So I wear sunscreen now. I wear a hat now.
Right.
And I mean, they told me it's from like years ago. It's not like anything I've done recently. But I mean, I used a tanning bed for years in high school and college. And
me too.
I'd never wore sunscreen and I just didn't care. And now I guess I care.
Yeah. So. And they always say that, right? It's like what you do in your youth. And mm-hmm. I don't know how many times, because I grew up half of my life in California and then the other half back in Hawaii. But I'm from Hawaii originally. But so when I moved back, I was like, baby oil, like all the like Hawaii oils and no sunblock because I am dark. We don't need to be doing that. Like, you know what I mean? In my mind, I was so stupid because now it's like I got so many sunspots that may turn into something down the line. And that, you know, so I have to monitor those things. But yeah, I remember being so burnt like to a crisp, which is like where the problem happens, right? It's it's the burning that you do that damages.
Nose.
Right. And the nose is like a perfect spot where it would get damaged. Yeah.
I burned it all the time. I still remember, like, I still remember days when it would like blister and peel and like, I don't know. I didn't really think anything of it. Apparently now I should have, but here we are.
Here we are.
Anyway, that was a very little tangent about cancer as far as competing. I don't know where that happened.
No, but still, I think we're all looking out. We go on a lot of tangents on this show. That's okay. I think, but I think that your two advices, one is, you know, just follow the process. Don't compare yourself as you keep going because you never know when you do pass. You know, like I always had people that I always looked up to early in powerlifting. And we didn't really have social media powerlifting in 2011 the way that it is now. Like that's when I really started. Yeah, so much. And it was all in Power Magazine. So it's like I didn't know anybody's anything. Yeah. Unless I read it in Powerlifting Watch online or read it in Power Magazine. And like there wasn't a lot of women being featured, you know, like every once in a while there was, but it wasn't a ton.
Yeah.
So like now there's much more numerous incidents for you to just compare all the stinking time.
Yes.
It's, and people are only showing highlights, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's one thing like I try and share like on my social media and like my Instagram, like I use it mostly for like training posts, a little bit of life stuff too. But like I try like when I do post, you know, for the day or whatever, like I will post if I had a bad day or I will explain it or I'll post missed failed lifts because that's just the reality of training. Like not every day is a highlight reel, which is what a lot of people try and show. So I try and be as open and honest and transparent, especially with training, as I can, because, and I've had a lot of people tell me that they really appreciate that because then they can, you know, relate to that and understand that, you know, they're not alone in this and other people, even really strong people or even coaches or, you know, whatever can also have the same kind of days that they are having. And I think that that helps a lot.
Oh yeah. I was really struggling yesterday. I had just emotionally and mentally, I was having a day that I haven't had in so long where I couldn't climb out of it.
Yeah.
Normally I can just kind of compartmentalize and move forward. You know what I mean? I think we have to it's in many ways. And normally I'm really good at that. And I just couldn't. I couldn't shake it off. And I was couldn't fake a smile. Yep. I couldn't, you know, it was so many of these things that I was like, I just can't fake it today. Like I'm just tired and I'm not gonna fake it anymore. So my lifting, you know, I just pulled a triple at 315. So I was going for my second. And the second rep just was like everything in me was just like, fuck.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't move. And I'm sitting there and everything's going through my brain. And I happened to record it because I try to record everything, put it on my stories. So I put that up, you know, and I talked about how like it was really a struggle for me. And the one thing I felt like I could control was my training and my effort that I could put. Like I might not be able to control the smile and all the shit that I was feeling in the moment.
Yeah.
That I could put the effort in. So I had to come back to it, you know? And so I went back for it and I got it. Yeah. And I think that like even watching your video you had posted about your 308 and how it moves so much smoother than your 308 warm up, right? And
that's ridiculous.
At the meet, and it was like, I loved it because when you warmed up at the meet, as you stood up, you're all, and you looked like you looked at Nate, like, what the fuck was that?
I did. Yeah, he was, yeah, I looked right at him. I was like, well, that was weird.
Yeah. But I think that's important too, because so many times when I'm talking to clients or even people, you know, they're like, I should have gotten this. Like, I got it two weeks ago. I should have done this. Like, I already, but that's not always the case, right?
No, not at all.
No.
That's one thing. Like, when people say that, I'm like, well, why should you have gotten it? Like, what entitled you to get this weight today or not get this weight? Like, the weight's the same. You were the one that either did or didn't get it. Like, there's no reason that you should have gotten that weight. So.
Yeah, there's so many factors that go into why you shouldn't, you might not hit it. And I think that that's important. Even stress like that.
Yeah, well, that traveling. I was just going to say that, like, the last month or so, I have had some not so great training days. Like, when I was super stressed about, you know, the skin cancer or not knowing if it was melanoma or not, like trying to wait, like there were days where like I would try training and I would just like break down because you know, I was hitting the weights or, you know, close to what I was supposed to be hitting, but they just felt horrible. And just mentally, like, I couldn't like give the amount of effort that I needed to. So like there were a couple, I still remember one day we were deadlifting and we had like some friends deadlifting with us. Gary and Newbie were there deadlifting, and then Nate, and then a couple other people from the gym. And like, I missed a lift that like, I shouldn't have missed, like, you know, shouldn't have missed, but the stress. And then I just went and I just sat down and I just cried for like a couple minutes and just like, and like, I knew that it was stress. So like, I wasn't, and you know, years ago, this would have destroyed me and I would have, you know, forever thought that I was so weak and, you know, never going to be able to lift this, because that's where I used to go, you know, spiral down the little spiral. And so I knew that this wasn't, you know, anything like that, but like, so I just kind of had to, you know, give myself a little pep talk of, you know, it's just stress. Stress affects your training. Stress is stress, no matter what kind of stress it is. And then, you know, I got back up and continued on with my training day. And that's just sometimes what you have to do.
Yeah. I think it's important to hear more of that, that things are not always going to be sunshines and rainbows.
No.
And you're not going to linearly progress all the time, especially after the first couple of years. Like, you're not going to see that.
Well, and that's kind of like, I'm at the point too, where like, to make progress on my, you know, my lifts is going to be
a climb. Yeah.
And I know I'm not going to PR at every meet. And I know, you know, maybe one lift will PR, but not the rest of them. Like, I know that. And, you know, I've kind of accepted that. It's kind of hard to accept that, but you know, there does come a point where you're like, all right, well now like every little pound is going to take like insane amounts of time to get. And I'm okay with that, but it's definitely not all sunshine and rainbows and butterflies, but it's worth it. So.
It's the acceptance. I think that's important. Yeah. Like, you need to accept that that's a norm, and it's, you know, like some part of the, like, I was talking to somebody about embrace the suck, you know, like part of it is embracing the suck, but it's also accepting, right? Like accepting the suck, and the suck can be that right there is your numbers, and the suck can also be just the training itself sucks. You just have to accept that it's going to suck.
Well, and I think what's important too is like on the days that do suck or on the days that are super hard or just not going the way that you want them to go, like it's more important to do something than to just like quit and give up and do nothing.
That's right.
Which was a hard lesson for me to learn. Like I used to just get so frustrated. I would just quit and cry and like pack up my bag and then just be done training. But I've kind of learned over the years that like, you know, you can be upset. I'll give myself a couple minutes sometimes if I need it, but like, it's important to get back up and like keep pushing through.
That's right.
Even if it's not the weight that you want to lift, even if you have to take off like tons of weight, but going through the movements, getting some stimulus in, not letting yourself quit. Like one, physically it's good to just like do something, but two, mentally to be able to push through those hard days, I think is something that's extremely important, because then if you have a horrible meet where you missed your second attempt squat and deadlift, you know how to just like push on again. Yeah. So
that's so important. All right, before I let you go, I ask all the people I interview,
what the hell is wrong with you people?
What the hell was I thinking when you think back to a time in your training where you did something very fucking stupid and you thought, now looking back, you think, what the hell was I thinking doing that? Can you think of a time?
So I would say there's two. one, when I was cutting to 123 pounds for my meets. Like that's one and probably the biggest one that stands out. And then two, which I think is kind of funny looking back on it now, but for a very long time when I first started training, I could not let Nate coach me. So I went through various other coaches, like online coaches, you know, different templates, different programs. And every time I would like falter and burn, like every time, and progress was like not really happening. So I'm kind of like, I wish that I could have just like let him train me from the beginning, because I think that would have, you know, why couldn't I have just let him do that? So
what held you back from that? Just because he's your husband?
So yeah, it didn't go well. He tried. We tried. There was a lot of fighting involved, like a lot. And I think it was a little bit of both of us. And like, you know, we'll talk about it now. And like, he was trying to be probably like too nice, to where like a coach sometimes has to be like not super nice and like realistic. So I think he would try and be too nice. And then I would just kind of like, I don't know, get upset or annoyed at like any type of like feedback he would give me if it wasn't good, because I wanted it to be good. I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like that's very typical, like of a husband wife duo when they're training like this.
Yeah. It definitely is not something I would recommend for everyone.
So what made it change? Like,
so I think, like I said, I tried out a bunch of different coaches online. I even had like a one-on-one online coach, and I every time would just like either not make progress, or I'd be leading up to a meet and like it felt not at all prepared. And then every time he would come in and basically like save me from whatever, you know, the issues were for training. And he would somehow pull me out of whatever horrible like spot I was in and then make my meets successful. And so then we kind of, I guess, just kind of came to a point. And for a while, we literally had to have a conversation of like, okay, like your coach, Nate, and then your husband, Nate, and they have to be two separate people. So like when we're at the gym, like we both just have to understand that that was Coach Nate talking to me, not my husband. Right. And then like we were at home talking about it. Sometimes, you know, you need to talk to like someone that you care about your training, not just your coach. So I was like, I need you to be like my husband and my friend, to just like listen to me when I'm like venting about something and not get offended about, you know, training or anything like that. And so I think that really helped when we kind of like set a little bit of boundaries almost.
Yeah, and which then, is wonderful and very indicative of your relationship. Because for him to be able to do that too, where you both are like, okay, I see what's going to be beneficial for you as an athlete and me as a husband. And we need to be able to kind of switch that. That takes a lot of maturity.
Yes.
In a relationship.
It took a little while. Yeah. And now we work really well together. Like I help coach him. He helps coach me. We also kind of semi-coach ourselves too. So we kind of like co-coach each other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
And so we have a really good like working relationship, you know, coach-athlete relationship, as well as like a business relationship too. Everyone always is like, I don't know how you guys spend so much time together. But like, we love it. We're literally together all day, every day. We work together, we train together, you know, we pretty much do everything together. And like, I love it. Everyone's like, oh, good luck with that. Like once I teaching, but I think it's great. So
yeah, you know, it's funny because my husband and I are very different. Our personalities are very different.
He's same. Much,
yeah, right. Like we've talked about this, right? Like you're more introverted. I'm more of the social butterfly. You remind me a lot of my husband in that way.
And you're more like natives.
Yeah. And but we, you know, it's like the extroverts gravitate towards introverts, in my opinion. So it's like, I love that my husband is the way he is. Like, I think if he was more extroverted, I'd be annoyed.
No, I think there is something to that, like an introvert and an extrovert together, because like the extrovert helps like bring out the introvert a little bit, but the introvert can kind of like pull back the extrovert sometimes too. So
totally. And he had that conversation with me this morning, like about like honing me
balance
in.
There.
Yeah. But we're together all the time. And I initially thought like, ooh, this might be bad. Like if we go into business and like they always say, don't go into business with your spouse, something can happen. Yeah. But it's made us so much closer because the business has gone up and down and up and down, and we've stuck through it, you know, and that's really helped us grow stronger in a relationship. But I love it too. I love being around his ass all the time. But Liz, this has been fantastic. So great. Excited. I can't wait to tell your story. And if anybody is interested in training, yes, Fortis Fitness Studio, I will have all your information, all your contact information. So if anybody is interested in online or in-person training, you can find Liz and her husband, Nate, at Fortis Fitness Studio in where are you at?
Mary Esther, Florida.
Mary Esther. Why do I keep thinking?
It's between, it's like by Fort Walton Beach, between like Pensacola and Destin area. So there's a bunch of little towns up here.
there is. You know what it is? It's always like Port and Fort. There's a lot of those. And I always get like, I don't know why I get those stuck in my head.
There's a lot of weird names of cities.